more with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Wednesday, September 3rd, 2025. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Jonathan Cohn, writer at The Bulwark, on Robert Kennedy's assault on our health care. Also on the program today, Capitol Hill Epstein victims call on the White House and Congress to actually release all the files. Meanwhile, one of the most conservative federal courts in the country, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, rejects Trump's use of the Alien Enemies Act to deport immigrants. Trump prepping Texas National Guard to invade Illinois. This amid calls for Pritzker to use the Illinois Guard to stop them. Judge issues remedy in the Google case, and it is barely a slap on the wrist. Jeffries and Schumer tee up next capitulation on budget negotiations. Federal court reinstates the FTC commissioner illegally fired by Donald Trump. And the U.S. blows up a boat in the Caribbean, killing 11 people by claiming it was full of drug dealers. U.S. appeals court allows Trump to cancel $16 billion in EPA grants to NGOs fighting climate change issued under Biden's Inflation Reduction Act. Lastly, Israel calls up reservists as it preps its next slaughter, this of Gaza City. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is hump day. Emma Bigland out today, so I get to say it. Thanks for joining us. We got a lot to get to today. Right now, as we speak on Capitol Hill, there are dueling press conferences. Mike Johnson, so desperate. You'll remember, he recessed Congress early about 6 weeks ago to avoid an attempt by Congressman Massey and Khanna to use a discharge petition to bring to the floor a vote on whether to release all of the Epstein files. A discharge position requires only a, it basically is a way of going around leadership and going around the controlling party by getting a majority of congresspeople to sign it. Now, he has all the Democrats. Off the top of my head, that's like 217. And he has three Republicans at this point. Marjorie Taylor Greene, Lauren Boebert, and one other, including himself. I guess that's four. And he needs, I think, three other Republicans to get that discharge petition. But the White House is desperately lobbying, desperately lobbying Republicans to vote no on bringing this to the floor. And that's why, as you have multiple Epstein victims on Capitol Hill giving a press conference, literally as we speak, Mike Johnson's attempting to distract from it by having his own press conference. I don't know what he's talking about that he thinks would distract from this. Maybe he's showing people the stuff that his son keeps him from viewing on his phone or something. I'm not sure. Here is a clip, and we'll have more of this tomorrow because, like I say, it's ongoing. But here is Massey yesterday making the point that the White House and the Republican leadership is desperately trying to whip votes against a discharge petition.
Well, the question is, why are they doing a pressure campaign? Why are they doing
why do
that?
Why do they?
Because they don't want the files released. Look, if my legislation were redundant, why would the White House be trying to stop it? Mm-hmm. It's not redundant. There are things that the White House doesn't want out there that my legislation would cause to be released. And that, even the White House doesn't believe that the Oversight Committee has released everything.
That's the point. Yesterday they did this big document dump, and it turns out, so far, people are like, there's nothing new here. This is all just sort of like extraneous. This is a classic document dump, 60,000 documents, very little information in it, and it's a way of distracting people. Here is Massey today on the Hill as they start to introduce the different victims. And remember now, you've got Republicans out there. What's that guy, the one who got shoved by McCarthy? I can't remember.
Tim Burchett.
Tim Burchett is out there going like, well, I don't know if we should do this because it could ruin the privacy of the Epstein victims. And, of course, you've got, I don't know how many are up there, but at least maybe close to half a dozen, maybe more, who are literally, publicly speaking, release these files. Here is Massey introducing this. And I guess Ro Khanna is speaking right now, but here is Massey from earlier.
I think it's shameful that this has been called a hoax. Hopefully today we can clear that up. This is not a hoax. This is real. There are real survivors. There are real victims to this criminal enterprise. And the perpetrators are being protected because they're rich and powerful and political donors to the establishment here in Washington, D.C.
Hard to argue. Hard to argue with that point. Ro Khanna is speaking, I think, right now, probably making a similar argument and also raising the fact that Republicans are desperately being lobbied by the White House to keep this stuff under wraps, which seems a little bit suspicious. At one point, you just want to move on. Here is this first Epstein survivor. Her name is Lisa Phillips. This was her speech this morning.
Congress must choose. Will you continue to protect predators, or will you finally protect survivors? Transparency is justice. Release the files. End the secrecy and stand with us in declaring that no one, no billionaires, no politicians, not world leaders, is above the law. And let me announce now, several of us Epstein survivors have been discussing creating our own list of names. We know the names. Many of us were abused by them. Now, together as survivors, we will confidentially compile the names we all know were regularly in the Epstein world. And it will be done by survivors and for survivors. No one else is involved. Stay tuned for more details on that. Because history is watching, and so are the women who will come after us.
I imagine there's people probably within, I don't know, several miles of those speakers who are a little nervous about that.
Meters.
Yeah, meters, very well, possibly. Here is Marina Lacerda, also an Epstein survivor, and asking one of the biggest questions, and apparently Acosta is going to be testifying behind closed doors in about 2 weeks to the Government Oversight Committee as to his involvement. He was formerly Trump's labor secretary, and before that, he was the U.S. attorney who gave Epstein a sweetheart deal and claims it was because the CIA told him he was an asset.
He belonged to intelligence.
That's what he was told. Or that's what he's told. That's what he's told us.
That's what he was told by somebody, and who he was told that by is still unclear.
Unclear. But here's Marina Lacerda.
Worst part is that the government is still in possession right now. Of the documents and information about that could help me remember. And get over all of this, maybe, and help me heal. They have documents with my name on them that were confiscated from Jeffrey Epstein's house and could help me put the pieces of my own life back together. But I don't have any of it. And I know the same is true for many of these women. We are here to support this bill today, not only for transparency, but for the American people. But if the government is going to release these documents to the public, describing the crimes committed by Jeffrey Epstein and others, the least they can do is give me my documents that they have about me. The other survivors deserve the same respect from our government. While our identifying information must be redacted to the public, it is equally important to provide the victims themselves with unredacted information. I will never forget when the FBI agent showed up in my door in 2008. Jeffrey Epstein hired a lawyer to represent me, or more like to represent him, I'd like to say. I couldn't ask any questions, and I had no idea what was going on. I was terrified. Until today, I think most of us are still terrified. I thought somebody was going to kill me. I thought something was going to happen to my sister or my mother. It went further out to even maybe thinking something would happen in Brazil with my family. And then one day, the lawyer said that everything was just going to go away. Like nothing happened. I didn't need to testify. When I asked him why, he gave no explanation. That was it. So why? Why was I never called to testify then? We could have saved so many women. We could have saved so many lives from being abused. Why did he get away with it in 2008? Why was he able to go on in the abuse with hundreds of girls after the Florida investigation?
The amount of courage it takes for these women to come out here is, I don't think, really, most people can understand or appreciate. I mean, I think I feel like, you know, I can only appreciate how much I don't appreciate, don't understand how much bravery it takes to do this type of thing.
Insanely chilling.
And it really is, I mean, all we know at this point is that the White House is desperate to keep this stuff under wraps. And
they've been having J.D. Vance call comedians and podcasters on this issue.
They literally contacted Joe Rogan and asked him not to talk about it. I don't know what he's been doing. I haven't been following his show.
Aliens and stuff.
Has he not been talking about it?
I mean, he's sort of moving away from it. And avoiding the subject, I think.
Well, that's because he's such an iconoclast. Nobody bosses him around. So we'll have more clips on this tomorrow. And obviously, you know, the more scrutiny on the Republicans, there are three right now. It's Nancy Mace, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and Lauren Boebert, who have signed on with Massey. And I think they need two more Republican lawmakers to sign on to it. And then the bill gets to the floor. And if the bill gets to the floor, presumably those people who voted to get it to the floor are going to vote for it, which would require the release of all these documents. But definitely worth, if you have a Republican congressperson, calling them
as a Republican,
I mean, look, as a constituent,
yeah.
This is not a partisan issue. You tell them, how could you vote against this? We're watching you. Mike Johnson's hoping that people are watching him on his, and I have a feeling they're not.
Yeah.
All right, couple of words from our sponsor, and we'll get to some of what's happening with the National Guard. According to Pritzker, the Texas National Guard is essentially staging at a federal building. Where is it? Outside of Illinois or something? There's a real question as to, will Pritzker get the Illinois National Guard? I mean, if the National Guard has not been federalized, it has no right. A state National Guard has no right to go into a state uninvited by the governor of that state. It's, for lack of a better term, an invasion. And Pritzker could activate the Illinois National Guard to stop the Texas National Guard. Theoretically, Trump could nationalize the Illinois National Guard, and it remains to be seen what that National Guard would do. But we will get to that in a moment. Felonious Monk, I think that's called a civil war. I mean, it sounds almost more like a coup because it's not, it really is just different militias at that point that are fighting. But we'll talk about that more in a bit. One of our sponsors today, I've been using their product for about 10 years, largely because I didn't want my information to be public. And they've done a very good job of it, frankly. DeleteMe, it makes it quick and easy and safe to remove your personal data online at a time when surveillance data breaches are common enough to make everyone vulnerable. And of course, the idea of doxing is always in the news. It is super easy to find personal information about people online. You Google it, it takes you to a data broker site. They have bought all this data. They then sell it, I don't know, $8 and you get to search or whatever it is, or $2. You can look up people's phone number. You can look up people's emails. You can look up their social media. You can look up their family members, their addresses, their past addresses, on and on. And having all of this information on the internet can have actual consequences in the real world. It makes everybody vulnerable. Not only, obviously, are you vulnerable to whack jobs trying to dox you or find you, but also hackers will buy information on the dark web. Then they'll combine it with information they find from data broker sites. And they use it for email phishing scams. They'll use it for scams to send you packages with fake QR codes on the outside with coupons, all that stuff. With DeleteMe, you can protect your personal privacy or the privacy of your business from doxing attacks before the sensitive information can be exploited. New York Times Wirecutter named DeleteMe their top pick for data removal services. Thanks to DeleteMe for sponsoring the Majority Report. You can take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for DeleteMe. Now, special discount for our listeners, 20% off your DeleteMe plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/majority. Use the promo code MAJORITY at checkout. Only way to get 20% off? Joindeleteme.com. Joindeleteme.com/majority. Enter the code MAJORITY at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/majority. Use the code MAJORITY. We'll put the information in the podcast and YouTube descriptions. Also, another product I've been using for at least a decade. Fast-growing trees. Fall is planting season. Did you know that? A lot of people think it's only spring. But fall is a great time to plant. Many plants and trees actually do better when they are planted at this time of the year. They get their roots in the ground before they go dormant. All the energy is in the roots right now. We're headed there. Fast-growing trees is your one-stop shopping. Doesn't matter if you live in the sunny south or if the air's getting a little chilly where you are, their plant experts can help you find the perfect fit for your space. They have all the needs you could possibly imagine for your yard. They got fruit trees. They got privacy trees. They got flowering trees. They got shrubs. They got grasses. They got creeping thyme. Whatever you want. Fast Growing Trees has you covered. You can find the perfect fit for your climate and your space. Order online, get your plants delivered directly to your door in just a few days without ever having to leaving home. They have an Alive and Thrive guarantee, ensures your plants arrive happy and healthy. That means no lugging stuff in the back of your Subaru and getting dirt all over the place, breaking the plants on the way home.
Sounds specific.
Yeah. Been there. No going to a big box store and being like, wait, all you have is Red Delicious apples? Do you not have any actual apple varieties? One type of peach? What is this? And the thing is, with fast-growing trees, I don't know that their trees necessarily grow faster, but they can ship like 6-foot trees to you. They pack them really well. They keep very well. Again, they have that Alive and Thrive guarantee. And if you have, if you want to get into gardening or planting, you have no experience, their website has all the information you need. Every plant comes with instructions and tips to care for it. You can talk to a plant expert about your soil type, your landscape design, how to take care of your plants. No green thumb required. Don't know your growing zone? They will tell you. They also have a resource center. It's full of tips and advice. You can find out you can use their zone finder there to find out what zone you're in. And there's subzones. It's not just 2, 3, 4, 5, et cetera anymore. There's like 5A, 5B. This fall, they have the best deals for your yard, up to half off select plants and deals. Other deals, listeners to our show get 15% off their first purchase using the code MAJORITY at checkout. That's 15% off fastgrowingtrees.com using the code MAJORITY at checkout. Now is the perfect time to plant. Use MAJORITY to save today. Offer valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Check out the link in the show notes and support the show. And lastly, today's episode is sponsored by Blue Land. We've gone completely Blue Land here now. We have same office and my house now. We have the Blue Land dish soap, which is actually like a powder. You pour it on there. You wash it. We have, at my house, I got the Blue Land tablets for my dishwasher. I've got the refillable spray bottles for windows and bathroom and just like the all-purpose. Blue Land is basically on a mission to get rid of single-use plastics, and they have helped me do it. I no longer carry big jugs of laundry detergent or dish soap or dishwashing liquid, none of that stuff, all gone. And their refills are really reasonable. I mean, sort of on the cheap side, frankly. relative to the other products you buy. All their cleaning stuff works great. The dishwasher stuff works great. The laundry stuff works great. They got a toilet bowl bomb that you drop in and use that instead of like the liquid. It's all terrific. I've made the switch to Blue Land across all the cleaning products around my house. Their products meet the highest standards of clean. They're effective yet gentle on my family, my kitty cat, my doggy, my planet. Blue Land was named an EPA Safer Choice Partner of the Year. From cleaning sprays and toilet bowl cleaner, dishwasher, laundry detergent tablets, Blue Land formulas are 100% microplastic free, made with certified clean ingredients, free from chlorine, bleach, and harsh chemicals that are safe to use around the house. I love not having to choose between the safe option and what actually gets my house clean. Check it out. Blue Land has a special offer for our listeners. Get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/majority. You don't want to miss this. blueland.com/majority, 15% off. That's blueland.com/majority to get 15% off. All right. In a moment, we'll be talking, in about 10 minutes, we're going to be talking to Jonathan Cohn on, who's been doing some reporting both on what's happening at the CDC and Bobby Kennedy's plans to essentially destroy our vaccine system in this country. We will talk to him about it. And also, you know, there is a he's written an interesting piece to give you a sense of the liability issues associated with vaccines, how we've handled it, how it could be reformed if there was actually a genuine desire to reform it, as opposed to some wackadoodle notions that Bill Gates is putting 3G in all of our earlobes from a vaccine. But we'll get to that in a moment. Meanwhile, you have Mayor Bowser of Washington, D.C., saying now that she will collaborate with the troops that Trump and the feds that Trump has stationed in D.C. And Brian and I were talking about this earlier. She has no federal representation. There is no congressperson that she can go to. There is no senator that she can go to. She is in a very, very weak position in terms of what can be done and how she can push back. And while I would like her, at least from a rhetorical standpoint, to say this is no good, politicians hate to be on the losing side of things, particularly when it's guaranteed. And she is not in a position to have any say as to what goes on in that city. However, J.B. Pritzker is a different story, and he is also running for president in 2028, or very likely. And Gavin Newsom has provided him a floor as to how much pushback he's going to give. And he is, at least rhetorically at this point, significantly above that floor. Here's Donald Trump yesterday tweeting out or truthing out, whatever it is, Chicago's the murder capital of the world, which fact check, not true.
Not the murder capital of this country.
And there's no special title like where you can be the murder capital of the world and not be the murder capital of the country. That doesn't work that way. Here is Pritzker. This is Pritzker yesterday saying that he has heard that the Trump has begun staging the Texas National Guard for deployment in Illinois. Now, he doesn't say how he knows this, but I imagine he would not be saying it if he didn't have it on fairly good authority.
Third, as lawful citizens, exercise their First Amendment rights. Trump and his team will be looking for any excuse to put active duty military on our streets, supposedly to protect ICE. We have reason to believe that the Trump administration has already begun staging the Texas National Guard for deployment in Illinois. I want to be very clear on this point, and I want to speak directly to the press right now. We know before anything has happened here that the Trump plan is to use any excuse to deploy armed military personnel to Chicago. If someone flings a sandwich at an ICE agent, Trump will try and go on TV and declare an emergency in Chicago. I'm imploring everyone, if and when that happens, do not take the bait.
So it sounds like they realize there's a certain inevitability that there's going to be federal authorities, that ICE is going to come in. You can't really prevent them. Now, what Brandon Johnson has done is said, at the very least, they're not going to cooperate beyond their statutory requirements. Hopefully the police end up doing that. Chicago police don't necessarily have the greatest record of both listening to the mayor or really abiding by the law in some instances. They literally found black sites there just a couple of years ago. But what Pritzker is basically saying is that this is the two-step, right? They send in ICE. There are protests where someone throws a sandwich. Someone calls an ICE agent duty head. And then Trump says, we need to bring in the National Guard. And I think what Pritzker is doing, I don't know that he expects that he's going to be able to keep everybody from protesting. But at the very least, he is exposing what the playbook is. And this is important because then you start to watch it play out. Here is, this is number, what was that, number two? Yep. This is number three.
I refuse to play a reality game show with Donald Trump again. What I want are the federal dollars that have been promised to Illinois and Chicago for violence prevention programs that have proven to work. That is money that Illinois taxpayers send to the federal government, and it's an insult to any and every citizen to suggest that any governor should have to beg the president of any political party for resources owed their people. I'd like to ask a question of my own, and it's one the press should be asking as well. When did we become a country where it's okay for the U.S. president to insist on national television that a state should call him to beg for anything, especially something we don't want? Have we truly lost all sense of sanity in this nation that we treat this as normal?
Yeah. The answer would be yes. That is the answer. Very conveniently. Here is Pritzker reminding Chicagoans to know their rights and advocating that people film, record what ICE is doing, and give it to the media.
To Chicagoans, what you can do is look out for your communities and your neighbors. Know your rights. Film things that you see happening in your neighborhoods and your streets and share them with the news media. Authoritarians thrive on your silence. Be loud for America.
Appealing to some patriotism there, but I like the idea of him telling people to engage in their communities. This is just the beginning of this, folks.
And the ICE watching stuff, the surveillance on ICE by volunteers is a very brave and inspiring development.
There was a piece, I think it was in the Washington Post, I don't know where it was today, about both the app makers, one who had a local one on the East Coast and one on the West Coast, But activists in California have been basically surveilling ICE. They leave from federal buildings. They are then either followed at a distance or kept track of, and people are warned that they're in a specific neighborhood. This is encouraging.
And ICE now has a budget greater than the FBI for this year, so.
And it's only going to get larger. All right. We're going to take a quick break. And in a moment, we will have Jonathan Cohn. We'll be right back. Hi. Sorry, we've just been having a little bit of technical difficulties. We're going to have Jonathan Cohen in just a word, in a moment. In the meantime, I just wanted to update you on this. You'll recall last year, Google was found to have violated antitrust laws. The judge, Amit Mehta, no relationship, I would assume. It's M-E-H-T-A, found that Google had violated the law, saying that Google was a monopolist. It has acted as one to maintain its monopoly. It has violated Section 2 of the Sherman Act. Mehta also found that the Supreme Court mandated what he called the remedial objective in monopolization cases to terminate the illegal monopoly. However, after, I guess it was like 6-8 months, almost a year, Mehta came back in with the remedy part of his ruling and found that remedies designed to eliminate the defendant's monopoly, i.e. structural remedies, are inappropriate in this case. The DOJ was had asked to remove defaults that place Google as the search choice for most browsers. When you go and try and search something in Chrome, obviously it defers to Google. They pay Apple $20 billion a year to be the default search. The judge in this case rejected both a Chrome spinoff, severing the ties between Google search and Chrome, and regulation of Android. He also did not find that Google had to stop paying Apple $20 billion a year because it would somehow hurt Apple's business. They need money to develop their phones. They have something like $1 trillion in cash. That may be a little bit of hyperbole, but not much. He went on to limit default payment agreements to just 1 year terms. I'm not sure what the idea is behind that. It just sounds like he got afraid. It is possible that some of the plaintiffs, state attorney generals, will appeal this case. We'll have somebody on next week to talk about the monopolies. We're going to take a very quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to Jonathan Cohen. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Emma Viglin out today. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the program Jonathan Cohen, senior national correspondent, now at the Bulwark, author of Sick and the 10-Year War. That one about, about the Affordable Care Act. That seems like a million years ago. Jonathan, welcome back to the program.
It's nice to be here, Sam.
Over the past week, we have seen the agency director of the CDC sort of get fired and then resign, and then four of top officials at the CDC also resign. Just, I think, today, 1,000 workers at the CDC wrote a letter imploring the administration to fire Robert Kennedy Jr. let's talk about, like, one of the things that came out over the past week was that over the course of the past 9 months, approximately, that Kennedy has been head of Health and Human Services, he's never consulted with the CDC about anything.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It is. I think actually a good place to start, just as a general description of what is happening right now at the CDC, and frankly, not just the CDC, other agencies, but CDC, you know, which is such an important, it's our command and control center for protecting our health. The way it's being treated, the way it is not being treated, the extent to which Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the most important health official in our country, has basically not consulting career staff, the experts there, on such a wide variety of issues, is shocking. And the chaos we're now seeing there between the layoffs and the reorganization and the resignations and the firings, shocking. I mean, this is another universe from anything we've seen before. I mean, I've been doing this for a while. You know, I'm a little gray in the beard here. I've covered Republican presidencies. I've covered Democratic presidencies. I covered the first Trump presidency. Nothing like this. This is completely dysfunctional government. And we have, I almost feels like a rogue HHS secretary running around making policy because he thinks it's right, surrounding himself with yes people who will go along with it. And everybody with expertise, everybody who has background in this, left and right. And, you know, when we're talking about the civil service, most of these people are not political. They're just career civil servants trying to serve their country and keep it healthy, being shut out of the process.
I was so shocked about this, and I will say that, full disclosure, and people know this, I hope, but I had worked with Kennedy on a radio program 10 years
That's
ago.
That's right.
And,
I forgot about that. Yeah.
I am there are people who are more disillusioned about him than I, but I know those people. So I'm in that, some of that universe. And it is one thing to say that he has these conspiracy theories in his head and preconceived notions of who's at the CDC and what their secret nefarious agendas are. But the idea that he didn't even bother to go and spend half an hour over the course of 9 months, an hour, even a couple of days, to make that assessment in person, just completely ignore this entire agency as if it doesn't exist, is mind-boggling. And this is an agency that is the product of over 100 years of essentially U.S. health policy.
Yeah, I I've never seen anything like this. And, he has come in and he has this idea that the CDC is part of this deep state health bureaucracy, which, of course, is, it's similar and of a piece of the broader attitudes of the Trump administration, that people who are career officers in government are at best not doing a lot of good, at worst they're actively undermining whatever the sort of, best policy is. And his attitude has been to just sideline them and ignore them and get rid of them. And, look, I've said from day one, I mean, I think there's a, every agency in government could work better. And if you want to talk about the CDC in particular, we can go back and relitigate what happened in COVID. And there's lots of room for criticism, lots of room for improvement. I don't think anybody would begrudge an HHS secretary from either party coming in and trying to shake things up a little bit. And certainly when you win an election and you get to, that's part of what you get to do, is you get to redefine an agency. But what I think is just so telling is there's a way you do that responsibly, right? I mean, you the first part of that is exactly like you just said, which is you get a feel for what's really going on, something you can't get from the outside. You get into office, meet with people, you study the problem, and then you put in place changes, even if they're radical changes, you do it in a way so that you're not destroying all the institutional knowledge, all the capabilities. And that's what he has done. And we are at this shocking place right now. I know we keep using the word shocking, but it's I don't know what you know what other word to use for it, where I you can't trust the material coming out of CDC. Because once upon a time, you knew that it might be right or it might be wrong, like any judgment might be. But it was the process of a kind of considered judgment by people who actually knew their field, who had were respected for their knowledge, their expertise. And that's just not true anymore. We've never been in a world like this.
And we're talking about career people, which is contrary to, you know, Kennedy's whole thing was that there is a revolving door and there's this relationship between industry and the agencies that are unhealthy. And I would agree with that. I think that's we see that in a lot of like sort of regulatory agencies. But it's generally the political appointees who are the biggest problem, or people who are leaving, not people who have been there for their entire careers and are continuing to do that. And so, all right, so who's doing what the CDC does? I mean, it seems like they're not allowed to sort of keep track of what's going on. They weren't consulted about the measles outbreak that was taking place. They could still be... apparently in Texas it is sort of burnt out, but we don't know what's happening in contiguous states. We don't know because none of this stuff is now being, to the extent that it's being recorded by the CDC, they're not allowed to publicly report it, is my understanding. What else has he supplanted? And then I want to get to the vaccine specifically in terms of vaccines, but what other functions are superseding, I guess, the CDC at this point?
So, I mean, it's hard to know, which is crazy to say. I mean, this is not how government normally works. We usually have some sense of how an agency works. You know, we might not know at the detail level of who's doing what, but there are offices and this is what they're doing. It's quite hard to know right now. This is not, you know, this administration, again, not just HHS, not just CDC, the entire Trump administration. They don't put out memos saying this is the, you know, they don't put out the reorganizational memos. They don't tell you what they're doing. What I know, first of all, is that we have a bunch of departments that have been eliminated or downsized dramatically. And then, as a result of that, even the parts of CDC that are kind of, you would think, on autopilot. So these are the things that maybe Kennedy doesn't care as much about, like, you know, helping cities and states with lead abatement, for example. These offices are so understaffed now, they can't respond quickly. And that's one of the most important roles that CDC plays, is as an advisor and kind of a big sibling to state public health agencies. You know, state public health agencies, they're the ones on the ground frequently dealing with, you know, outbreaks when they first happen, or environmental toxins. You know, you sort of go down the list, and they need expertise, they need manpower. Sometimes they need someone to just pick up the phone and sort of call on behalf of the federal government to make the wheels of bureaucracy or the private sector respond. And CDC, that's a really important role of CDC. Well, you can't get any of that done if there aren't people to pick up the phone or answer the emails. And that's what's happening at CDC right now, because they've been so decimated that they are just not responding. We saw this actually in the measles crisis early on. There was a story that one of those stories that I thought would have gotten more attention. It was in, I think I want to say KFF Health News, about how the people in Texas during the outbreak were saying it was really hard to get responses out of CDC when they needed help, when they needed expertise, when they needed advice, when they needed the federal government to kind of be the heavy and make something happen. They just weren't getting calls back. And it seems like it was a combination of A, there weren't enough people because they've been downsized so much, and B, there was this hesitation because it touched on measles, because it touched on vaccines, because there were these orders telling CDC people not to communicate certain things in public. There was hesitation. What can we do? What can we not do? What will be allowed? And it's just mind-boggling. I mean, this shouldn't be a left-right issue. It shouldn't be a Democratic-Republican issue. It's public health. It's keeping people from getting sick and dying. I mean, there's nothing political about that.
Well, I want to turn to the story you did about the vaccine industry about a week or so ago, because it seems to me that Kennedy has taken a very libertarian turn over the past 10 years. And just the concept of public health is he has an issue with the concept of public health, it feels like. I mean, just and broadly speaking, will you just sort of, I guess, walk us through that notion of what public health is relative to when I go see the doctor, right? I mean, like, because there's a different sort of calculus that's going on with public health than there is with an individual's health.
Yeah. So, I mean, when I think of public health, there's a lot of different ways to describe it. But, you know, when I think of public health, I think of threats that are out there, that are threats to whole communities or threats to the country as a whole, to the public as a whole, where we can address them best through policies. They may be policies that get at the underlying causes of disease or conditions or biological threats. We can be working together on being vigilant, watching, detecting them, so we know when something is happening in the aggregate. And then, of course, if something happens, if there's an outbreak, if there's a condition we see happening at a large scale affecting large numbers of people, then we can start to respond. And it obviously requires medical knowledge. That's an important piece of that, what your doctor has, right? That's part of it. But there's a whole other there's a whole other kind of knowledge, a whole other skill set that is specifically involved in understanding how to watch, monitor, react to these sort of healthcare threats at a larger scale. And that is what CDC does and always has done. And what the people at CDC do, they're trained to do. That's a special kind of training you get. It's a special kind of experience you accumulate. And frankly, that's what's going out the door right now.
And there's a different, there's also, like, it seems to be a different sort of a calculus, right? Like, I mean, we have this in public policy all the time. What should the speed limit be? We could bring traffic deaths down to, you know, virtually none if our speed limit for all our cars was 5 miles an hour. But obviously society needs to function. People need to get places, and we find some type of balance between the need for us to have transportation for food and for products and for individuals, and the potential that, you know, tens of thousands of people are going to die on the highways because of the speed that people travel. There's a similar calculation in the context of public health, right? Like, you know, we can say that it's it is inefficient to have free, colonoscopies at age for everybody who's age 30. But at one age, it does start to make sense that, yes, it's going to cost money up front to have everybody get colonoscopies, but it's going to save money down the road. I mean, these are all the calculations. There are going to be some people who are still, had they gotten that colonoscopy at age 30, because it was mandated, would have saved their lives. But it's, as a society, we make the determination that we can't function as a society saving that. This calculus is what really is at the heart of the vaccination issues, it seems to me, is that when we vaccinate a broad population, there are always going to people who are going to have adverse reactions, just like people who take Tylenol. Like there's no medical procedure or medicine where you won't have people taking an adverse reaction. But the question is, as a public, does it promote health, i.e. more people being healthy than not, even if the actual requirement of a vaccination ends up making people sick who wouldn't otherwise be sick?
Yeah,
right? I mean, this is the dynamic that we're talking about with vaccines.
Sure.
And so tell us the story of how we got to where we are, like where we are in terms of liability with vaccines and why, and we should talk about potential reforms. But Kenny is talking about basically blowing it all up, it seems like.
Right, right, right. So, I mean, yes, vaccines, the vaccines that we have that have been approved, they're enormously beneficial. They have saved literally millions of lives. I think sometimes it's, you know, it's been so long since we've seen people sitting in an iron lung or large numbers of kids dying from measles or whooping cough, you sort of go down the list. We sort of take those things for granted. Those diseases used to kill and disable large numbers of Americans. It was hard to get a childhood once upon a time. When those vaccines came along, people were elated because they remembered how awful that was. Now, like you said, every vaccine is going to have some people who are going to have side effects or bad reactions. Just like every medical, as you said, every medical intervention has some risk and some downsides. Decision you're always making is when is it worth it? When is it not? What do we recommend? What do we not recommend? And with these vaccines, the calculus, frankly, is just not tough. Even a vaccine like, say, the COVID vaccine, which doesn't, you know, at this point, because of the way the virus has mutated and what we now know about it, is, you know, there's still a good chance that if you are vaccinated against COVID, you can still get COVID. But there's a big difference. You're much less likely to end up in the hospital. You're much less likely to end up with long COVID. You're much less likely to end up dead. That's a pretty big deal. Now, do some people have reactions to COVID, this COVID shot? Yes. Will there be the rare serious side effect? Yes. And true for other vaccines. This has always been the case. We've sort of dealt with this problem before. In the 1970s and 1980s, there was a lot more focus on these side effects. And in particular for the pertussis vaccine, again, that's whooping cough, there was a lot of attention being given to the side effects, including the ones that would go away in a day or two or in some time. And then there were reports of more serious side effects. Never entirely clear how much they were really linked to the shot. Later research suggested maybe, probably not. But there was there were these cases, and people who had sort of serious conditions after getting the shot would go to court and sue and get these very large liability judgments. And the vaccine makers at that point were like, well, wait a minute, you know, vaccines aren't necessarily the most profitable line of business for a drug company. And the drug companies were like, you know, if we're going to have to face these lawsuits and this is draining our revenue, maybe we just won't make the vaccines. And a bunch of them got out of the business of making the pertussis vaccine. When that happened, we had shortages of pertussis vaccines. There weren't enough shots to go around because there weren't enough companies producing them. So the government stepped in a bipartisan measure and said, look, we want to compensate people. If you're injured, we want to make sure you can get compensation for it. We want to make it quick. You shouldn't have to go through years and years of litigation. You shouldn't have to roll the dice on whether you found a good lawyer or not. If you're the vaccine maker, you should know that we understand there will be the very occasional rare side effect. You're not going to be sort of facing this huge, massive judgment because those tend to be sympathetic cases. And even if you did nothing wrong, you're going to have to pay this big judgment. So we're going to protect you from that. And doing this will then produce a steady supply of vaccines, which is what all the pediatricians want, what the public health experts want. So they created basically a no-fault system where you basically, if you have gotten a vaccine and then you have a certain that's covered by this program and you have a certain kind of injury you can demonstrate that happened afterwards, you get a payment and you don't have to go to court and whatever. You can still sue for negligence, but it's hard to win that case. Yeah.
And this is sort of almost like a separate vaccine judiciary, essentially, right? Where it's more like an administrative judge, and you go and you make your case through this process. It is not within the standard civil legal system. It's almost like in a parallel legal system where you go in and you can get awards, but it doesn't function in the same way, and you can't take down a manufacturer. And again, like you say, it's really the only way, unless, and frankly, I would certainly be open to this, we started having the government create a capacity to develop vaccines. Now, that's what Bobby Kennedy would do. if his like belief, his supposed sort of like conspiracy theories were accurate, that it's too corrupt within the context of capitalism to allow for vaccines, that all the motivations are a function of money, you would say, let's nationalize it. Let's expend government money and resources on developing it. We already spend the money on developing it, and we have ownership of it. And you can contract out to, facilities like and companies that have the capacity to make this stuff. You contract hire them, you pay them a lot of money, and it's government owned. They're not even contemplating anything like that. What has happened to that regime over the years? That came in what, like the 80s, early 80s?
It was created in the 80s. It was created in the 1980s. And, over the years, on the one hand, it has kept a steady vaccine supply. So it's met that goal. And it's kept a fairly, it's kept the vaccine makers in the market. So it's met that goal. It has not always done a great job of compensating people. There's a couple of reasons for that. It hasn't really been updated legally since Congress passed it. So the awards are not as big as they should be. In addition, it's been slow. At some point, the Justice Department decided that it should be contesting these cases more because it saw it sort of saw its job to protect the federal treasury, and it didn't want to make sure people weren't going to the system and draining it unfairly to kind of make a quick buck. That is not how the program was intended to work exactly. If you talk to the people who were there, and there's been a concern they've pushed back too much so that it is actually harder to get an award. And then in addition, they just haven't increased the staff enough to deal with the load as we've added more shots and more conditions. Fixing all of those makes a lot of sense. It is a cause that would get bipartisan support. If Secretary Kennedy came in and said, look, I want to fix the vaccine court. I want the court system. It's not really called a vaccine court, but, we can call it a vaccine court. If we're going to fix this system so it's more responsive and it pays out sums that are more appropriate for today, I think there would be people, longtime vaccine enthusiasts would say, yes, that's great. In fact, it's closer to what the program was supposed to be when it was founded. But that does not seem to be, I think it's fair to suspect that it is not what he has in mind. I say suspect because as with so many other things he's done, he hasn't been particularly clear. But he has hinted strongly, and people I know who have heard about some of these discussions and all the scuttlebutt that's being reported is that he is looking more at changes that would really just blow up the system. And we sort of revert back to the pre-1980 system, at least for some of the vaccines, or that he would create a system where it would run out of money very quickly. But one way or another, the guarantee to the companies that they could continue to produce without facing these huge liability threats that had once scared so many off. Well, that we'd be back to that system, and we'd be back to shortages again. And that is the concern. And I think there's good reason to be concerned.
What's that? We should say that just I guess an hour ago, Florida essentially said that the state's going to eliminate all vaccine mandates.
Yeah, I saw that. And, 10 minutes ago. Yeah.
Yes. And earlier today, I think it was California, Oregon, and Washington State said they're going to form some type of consortium to, I guess, secure vaccines or create their own guidance because they're not getting any from the federal government in terms of like who is advised to get the COVID shot. And then I guess presumably any sort of future viruses or maybe even the flu for that matter. What do we do if like, I want a vaccine booster. I'm not 65 yet, a couple of years shy. But I want my vaccine booster. I want my COVID booster. I don't want to get COVID. I want my kid to be able to get a vaccine booster as well, because I've seen the impact of long COVID, and I've seen the impact on kids subsequent from getting COVID. The first time they get it, it's not a big deal. What do we do? Do I got to go to Canada? And is there going to be like vaccine tourism trips to like Canada or?
I mean, it's, you know, it's hard to know, first of all. A lot is going to depend on things like what insurance companies decide to do, what they decide to cover for people who have private insurance. Obviously, for people who are on public insurance programs, that's going to depend on what the government says. It is not clear to me to what extent states will be able to manage vaccines within their borders as they want. I mean, there's so many layers of legal complication to that. But let's assume for the sake of argument that we end up with a system where, okay, the California, Oregon, Washington, they make sure that vaccines are available and they keep in place their vaccine regimes, and maybe New England does.
California is important, right? Because we're just talking like this is a numbers game. Like at one point, a manufacturer will be like, it's just not worth our while to produce this small amount of vaccines. You know, there was a Lyme, apparently there was a Lyme vaccine, I don't know, developed 20 years ago. And they just decided like there's just not enough of a market for it. And so we're just not going to produce it. And you know, now Lyme has gone completely bonkers up in the Northeast.
So I mean, let's assume for the sake of argument, and you're right, having California, having New York, those are big markets. So you know, that presumably keeps let's assume optimistically for the moment that there's enough states that are sort of really still on board with vaccines that the makers still stay in there. And so New England, the Northeast, West Coast, maybe my home state of Michigan, places like that, we still have vaccines and most people are vaccinated. And let's then assume though that there are states where you see vaccine levels dipping like we did in that part of Texas, like we might see in Florida. On the one hand, I mean, this is now the fact of life in so many things, right? With our social programs, we have Blue America, Red America, and they're very different. Problem is, germs don't stop at the border, right? So, number one, that's only going to do so much good. But I also was thinking, just to give you an example, and when I think of sort of like who is vulnerable, you know, I think there's a tendency to be a sort of libertarian, that you were saying before, a libertarian attitude. It's my decision whether or not to have a vaccine, and at some level, of course, it is. But it's not like that can't affect other people. So I'm just imagining I grew up in Florida. What's in Florida? Disney World's in Florida. Who likes to go to Florida? Disney World, Florida. Kids, you know, how many kids want to go to Disney? Well, if you're an immunocompromised child, if you're getting cancer treatment, for example, and we have a world where Florida vaccination levels are, you better stay away from Disney World. Right. You better stay away from the state of Florida, because just going to that state is going to expose you, increase your exposure to something you cannot fight off. And by the way, again, even if you don't go to Florida, you're still going to be at greater risk because, again, germs don't observe state borders, and there will inevitably be times, you know, in airports and moving around where you'll get exposed to these things. So these things, you know, that's kind of the world we might be headed to.
It's a little bit terrifying. And I would say coming out of COVID, it's become very apparent to me that the tolerance this country has for hundreds of thousands of people dying, like, you know, look, we've been talking probably since the Iraq War era. We certainly know that there's a tolerance for us to be involved in the killing of people thousands of miles away. But it was a little bit surprising to see the level of tolerance that Americans have for several hundreds of thousands of people to die, you know, that were easily preventable over the course of a year or two. I mean, it feels like there's I don't know what that's called. Is it nihilism? I mean, or what? I feel like it's going to take a generation or two of this type of regime for people to respond to it, because it's very hard. It's just so it's not transparent. It's very difficult, I feel like, for people to see the implications of this when they're looking at a ground level. And when you have removed the aggregation function of the CDC that looks at this stuff and says, hey, look, there's 500,000 people who have died over the past 17 months who didn't need to die. When you don't have that, even that function, it feels like people are just going to go about their business and be like, oh, poor old Joe. He got whatever, the bug, and died.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned that. Yeah, I mean, you remember COVID when there was at one point, right? Trump said, people may remember, he said, well, if we just stopped counting, people wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't be so bad if we just stopped counting the people.
I mean, he was sort of right, at least in terms of the way that the people perceived it.
You know, to this day, I'm shocked because, yeah, again, I live in Michigan, so I'm right outside Detroit, which was one of the early cities hit. It wasn't as bad as New York, but it was pretty bad. And I remember every day in headlines, you know, prominent people were you were reading about were dying from COVID. And then, of course, for everyone you read in the headlines because they were famous, there were 10, 50, 100 also dying. They just, you know, they didn't get a story in the newspaper because of that. And I am shocked still that that has sort of been memory hold. And I wonder sometimes, I guess as you do, is it that people have forgotten or they've just sort of decided it's okay that, you know, we're going to live with that, that, you know, that it's okay if large numbers of people die. If, you know, and this does bring us back to Kennedy because, you know, when you listen to him talk, he's very big on this idea of often called natural immunity that like, well, you know, one of the problems with vaccines is that, you know, it doesn't provide you with the same kind of protection. If you actually get the infection, you'll have longer lasting protection. It might even protect you against some other conditions. Now, number one, that is not a scientifically valid statement. There's, you know, whether you get more protection or longer protection from a disease versus a shot will depend on all kinds of circumstances, including the disease, the shot, who you are. There, this idea that it sort of protects you better in the future against other conditions is like this speculative theory. There's nothing, there's really nothing out there yet to show that. But, you know, let's even assume it were true that there were some marginal advantage to getting the in terms of your future immunity, that you had better immunity going, stronger immunity going forward from an infection rather than the shot. Well, the flip side of that is you're also a heck of a lot more likely to die from the infection because you got to get the infection. You know, what doesn't make you, what doesn't kill you will make you stronger, sure, but it might kill you.
Not, well, first of all, not always. What doesn't kill you does not always make you stronger. But even if it did, it also could kill you.
Right.
Is what you're saying. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
and, I mean, I think it's, if anything, there's a little bit, I mean, I'm not the first to say this and I don't see inside the man's head, so I don't know what he's really thinking, but you know, people have said this feels awfully Darwinist, you know, the strong will survive and we'll lose a couple along the way, or eugenicist, like, you know, this is how we get to a stronger humanity because the people with strong immune systems will evolve. And you know, the reality is, the reality is because we've had all these advances in medical science, including right at the top of the list, vaccination, lots of people are alive today who would otherwise be dead. And they are people who have, you know, weakened immune systems or who have some kind of disability or have some kind of underlying medical condition. These are the people who are saved by vaccines and all these medical interventions. Me, I think that's great. I'm really glad all those people are here. You get the feeling listening to Kennedy that I'm not saying he wishes they were gone, but the way he talks sometimes, it does sound a little bit like, well, if we lose a few people along the way, you know, everyone's going to, you know, in order to just let these infections burn through these communities, if we lose one or two kids here and there and a couple people die here, we'll be better off. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's reminiscent of both what like Ron Paul said, I think it was during the 2008 Republican debate about somebody who doesn't have health insurance, they die on the street. They, you know, they've made their own choices. This has a more sort of biological foundation for it. And, you know, like I have spent probably an inordinate amount of time trying to figure out what has gone into at least. There has been it's not a radical transformation in terms of Kennedy because he's always flirted with this with the anti-vax stuff, and to be fair, you know, in 2003, 2004, there was enough of a question about thimerosal that it was removed from the vaccines, and then it turned out, no, this doesn't impact autism rates or anything. And but I do think that part of it is he comes from essentially, you know, aside from all the sort of like maybe psychological things that are involved in his childhood and growing up. I mean, there's a certain amount of trauma associated with that. There's also like an aristocratic air about the Kennedys. And you see it in the context of how many of them died doing things that they probably shouldn't have been doing. You don't fly an airplane at night if you don't have enough hours of training. You don't go glading through ski resorts if you're not that good of a skier. I mean, a lot of people in their family have died doing things. There were times where I was waiting on Kennedy to record something remotely, and it's, he was diving to disentangle a sea turtle from a net, or he's picking up a roadkill, or a bear or whatever it is. I think there is a sense of like, survival of the fittest. And sometimes it doesn't work out. And that's being imposed on the entire society. And it's also ignoring that certain people get born into circumstances, not just that are biological, but are also environmental, that impact their health, that the whole point of a society is to protect them. And it seems like we're going to take a break from that theory for God knows how long. Jonathan Cohn, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Important topic.
All right, folks. We're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the program. And that's it. What's going on over there? Oh, there we're gonna take some phone calls. I'm gonna take a quick break. Just a reminder. It just occurred to me that I was supposed to do that entire interview in the Bobby Kennedy voice. I forgot about that. It was the technical problems, and I forgot that I was gonna just.
You've been shit talking me, you jackass.
You could have heard Sam speaking in a grating, impossible to listen to voice for 20 minutes. You missed out on it.
And I wouldn't have said anything. I would just had him come on. It's been like, John, it's a real pleasure to have you here. Talk about this very important topic. And
answer
to see
the question.
How long he, like with just a look on his face. Older than Sam. There has not been a transformation of Bobby. RFK Jr. has always been a piece of shit. Even he was part of the River Keepers. I'm not talking as a person. I am talking about ideologically, and it may be the case that he was paying lip service to a different ideology, but he was at least paying lip service to a different ideology.
The shift specifically regards to like capitalism and environmentalism and the free market libertarian stuff. Like,
totally.
You can find very contradictory things from him like 10 years ago.
Definitely. Just the notion of the commons in and of itself. I mean, when we talk about public health policy, what we're talking about one element of the commons, right? The idea that we can, that public health is a common good. But that concept he jettisoned. I don't know if it was 10 years ago or 15 years ago or when. Just a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only support the free show, but you also get the fun half. And you allow this show to survive and thrive. Our members are a very important part. Listen, I cannot tell you how many times I've applied for a chorus grant. And I don't even know.
Just bounces back.
I don't know where. Was there an email address?
Can someone tell me where the email address
is? Although the chorus, you can apply on their website.
Is that true?
Yep.
We should apply.
I paged through it.
We should apply.
We applied on the, well, we paged through it. I don't know if we actually clicked send, but we did that on the Left Reckoning page.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. You can donate too.
Double What's dip. That? There's nothing wrong with
we
that.
We can also donate to
the
chorus?
The donate is a little bit more prominent
than the apply
application thing, it looks like.
I mean, I'd apply. I bet you the chances of us getting it now would be pretty high. We're actually going to do that.
I mean, I'm still a bit salty that I didn't get any CARES Act money. From the what was that called? The bailout money from COVID? The CARES Act?
CARES Act.
We didn't take advantage of that. Every right-wing podcast that's libertarian took advantage of that.
Well, I mean, we could still apply.
Maybe we'll have a disclosure to make next week.
Well, there we go.
For the $8,000 incubation tier.
Also, justcoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. No, fair trade coffee and hot chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Matt, Left Reckoning, what are you guys incubating over there?
Last night, we had Brian Vokey on the program. This guy sitting right next to me.
Some guy.
Talking about
some bozo.
His experience in the Austin comedy scene and the mothership. We talked about Jimmy Dore and also talked about I don't know if he's a billionaire, a CEO stealing memorabilia from a child and then saying, well, if you were faster, you would
have. Oh, is that Polish guy with the hat?
Yeah.
Saw that video.
It's so funny. Did you see his response to it?
No.
He's like, look, you guys are all getting bent out of shape. If you were faster, you would have the hat.
He said that to the 8-year-old kid?
To the media.
And then he threatened to sue anybody who makes fun of him.
So normal stuff going on in our business community. So yeah, check that out, patreon.com/leftreckoning. Also some news out of Canada where the labor movement is standing up for Palestine.
See you in the fun half.
3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on?
It's nuts. Wait a second. Hold on for a second. The Majority Report. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt!
Who?
Fun.
What is up, everyone?
Fun.
Nomi Key.
You did it!
Fun.
Let's go, Brandon.
Fun.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today!
Fundamentally false. No, I'm sorry. Women.
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But dude, you want to smoke this, 7-8?
Yes.
Hi, me? Is this me?
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm gonna go start
off. Libertarians.
They're so stupid though.
Common sense says of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him!
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I wanna say. 857-210-3501. 1/2. 3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion.
Sold.
It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less.
But let me say this.
Poop.
You call it satire. Sam goes with satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled,
wow,
folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock. We're already late, and the guy's being a dick. So screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.
We are back, folks. I want to take phone calls, but we can't get through to our phone system is down. Noel from San Francisco, can we get that piano riff back for the standby music? What was that?
Piano riff?
I don't know what that means. Ramona Frankenstein, Sam, I want to formally apologize for making you saying bussy yesterday. I also apologize because I'm not going to stop trying to get you to say that word because it's hilarious every single time. This might count as an elder abuse, but if that's the case, I'm an abuser. I'm sorry about that. I was driving sushi with the Blood Boys. I was driving my kid to preschool yesterday listening to the show, which we do most mornings, and my kid was excited to hear you were back from your break. Weird kid. Yeah. Preschool?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Wow.
Get him on Miss Rachel or something. Maybe a little bit older for that.
Wait till that kid starts watching Bob's Burgers. They're gonna freak out. Wayward leftist. Oh my God! It's Linda and Bob's anniversary. I remembered because 9 is divisible by 3. Center Spiral. I watched the Epstein victims speak. They're compiling their own list. They might confuse some, but people need to understand how important having leverage is when they're asking Congress to take action.
I mean, that's the thing, is that's why playing those two victims, the first one saying we're going to do our own list, the second one saying, hey, I would like to piece together how exactly I was victimized, and you have evidence for that. It really shows how ridiculous it is that, what's that guy's name that we said? They said, like,
Burkett.
This is about the privacy for the victims, when the victims are like, please, why are you holding on information that I would like to know about myself?
Yeah. It's quite possible a lot of these or some of these victims, you know, have either repressed a lot of the details of what happened or were either in an emotional or like physiological state of, you know, maybe they were, there were drugs involved and whatnot and aren't aware of some of the specifics.
That's why an actual investigation is important.
Krusty Gnome, it's political now because there's a large contingent of Americans who will never trust medical experts again. I would argue that the reason why that's the case in the first place is because of politics. That, I mean, do people forget this? But in the early days, like in the early days, like in the third week of March, you had right wingers going around with a microphone like, I don't see any bodies here.
Dave Rubin.
Was he in New York or in Florida?
He was in L.A. He was walking around L.A. I think it was L.A. saying, because they could be.
There were people
Florida
who were
later.
Like going down to the
going down to the refrigerator trucks in New York City and going like, I don't think there's anybody in there. And then, I mean, do people not remember like the whole plandemic thing? Then the question, like, it's fake. It's not happening. Then it's actually manufactured. And it's just the way, like, without a doubt, there were failures. I would argue the vast majority of these failures were a function of not enough resources wanting to be expended to make places safe. Like, federal government, remember, like, Trump spent the first, like, 4 months in total denial. Instead of saying, like, we're going to marshal billions of dollars over the course of the summer, we're going to go into schools, we're going to put in air filters, we're going to deploy resources to figure out the safest way to get kids back into school, the safest way for teachers and staff at these schools to be back into school. They didn't do any of that. Instead, you had, over the course of, like, the spring, states competing for PPE. Do people remember this? Like you had states stealing stuff from other states because it was sort of like a Hunger Games situation.
On this note of trust in medicine, Abdul El-Sayed was on with Ayman this weekend on MSNBC, and this was a really good answer about this CDC stuff and sort of what needs to be built up in the wake of all this destruction to these institutions.
I think we're so often focused on what we're against rather than saying what we're for. Mm-hmm. And too often, those of us who have stood for science, we've had a really hard go of it because we've watched as corporations who we entrust to make things like vaccines and pharmaceuticals that people need and deserve, they have too often written the rules that regulate them. And that's meant that our healthcare is out of reach. I got to be honest with you. During COVID, we're asking people to take a vaccine for a disease that didn't exist a year ago, but then they can't afford insulin, which is medication for a disease they know they have. I think we have to recognize that the trust in public health has to also be trust in the healthcare system. And what that means is that we've got to make it easier to get healthcare in the first place. So I want to be going out there saying, hey, look, in a healthcare system where no matter what you do for a living, if you're working at all, you can go and get health care, even if you've been laid off of your job, and you don't have to worry about falling into medical debt. And by the way, when there's a new pandemic, here's a new medication we created that you can take to protect yourself. But when you feel locked out of the healthcare system, like too many people do, then when we come to you with a new medication that's for free for a disease that didn't exist a year ago, you're probably less likely to trust us. And so I mean, there's a reason as a public health official, I wrote the book on Medicare for All, because I know that if we're not serious about guaranteeing every single person in this country access to health care, then we're going to continue to lose the battle for hearts and minds when it comes to public health, too.
I mean, it makes total sense. If you have a Medicare for All type of system, you're going to have more of the population have a relationship with the doctor. And they're going to have a much better perspective on this stuff.
And it's not going to be one where you're, like, worried about, like, pickpockets.
Exactly.
Taking $500 out of your next paycheck.
A for-profit medical system is, turns out, in the case of, like, an extreme public health event, turns out to undermine people's confidence in public health. I hope he wins.
I mean, Stevens isn't exactly Zell Ramamdani when it comes to charisma, I would say.
New Jersey mailman. Trump and the Republicans blasting their war crime video killing Venezuelan fishermen is extremely reminiscent of human safari videos posted by Russian soldiers. How they drop bombs on civilians. Even if everyone on board was Pablo Escobar, you still can't murder people. You have to arrest. Disgusting stuff. Yeah, this is nuts. And I am sort of shocked, although less and less shocked by anything these days, that there isn't more controversy about this. The U.S. government has, by its own admission, murdered 11 people who were in a boat in international waters, supposedly Venezuelans, who were en route to Trinidad. Like, I it's unclear to me, like, what, under what authority the U.S. government has to randomly blow up a boat full of people who are, I mean, even if they were narco terrorists, which we don't know.
And what does that term mean?
Even if we knew what narco terrorists means.
Drug war and war on terror at the same time.
Under what authority do we have to blow up a boat?
I mean, put this video up. Like, this video, we have multiple, I don't know if this is drone surveillance. They have multiple angles. Go intercept it if you think that they're going to, like, come to the, I mean, you don't even think they're coming to the U.S. So
no.
This is just,
I don't know.
Target,
like,
practice.
I don't, exactly. It's shocking.
It's wild to remember the impact of the WikiLeaks collateral murder video.
Yep.
And everyone was sort of like appalled by that. And this is just basically a Bukele style highlight reel of the sort of fascism they're doing lately.
Yeah, we can, they're Trent and Agua. How do you know? Well, didn't you see the Chiron?
Yeah, we blew him up.
It was on the video. And we could just now, this anti-war president now is just going to randomly pick boats to bomb. It seems a little bit messed up to me. Nobody, it doesn't seem to even be making like the slightest dent in the news.
No, all I see is like, this is awesome. Like, it's like on the right side of things. Right side of the news.
It's crazy. Pete, so Emma's out today. Can we expect some big tragic news regarding Trump in a few hours? Saturn girl, I just got my Henson razor and I love it. I now have the Sam Cedar razor, the Sam Cedar toilet seat, the Sam Cedar hair vitamins, the Sam Cedar electrolytes, and the Sam Cedar identity protection. My collection is almost complete. Now all I need is a silicon Sam Cedar. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, even I was thinking like a Funko Pop at first. I wasn't.
I didn't quite see where that was
it's
going.
It's too early for me to get that.
Tom Lofink. Happy Friends Day Wednesday, folks. According to Nigel Farage, patriotism is when you ask increasingly hostile U.S. government to sanction your country. Also, yes, both Sam and Emma were out when the Queen died. Binder guest hosted. I remember vividly because if you thought it was amusing to watch Britain lose its mind after the Queen died from across the pond, try actually living through it. LOL, I will always remember the weeks of insanity I was legally required to take seriously. Miss Heathen. Okay, this is crazy. Ro Khanna woke up to protect hate speech against trans people in the UK. Defending that vile transphobe loser, Graham Linen, who's not a comedy writer anymore, got arrested for threatening tweets. He spends all his time harassing folks online and pushing anti-trans policies in UK.
Yeah, I'm not sure what Linehan was arrested for. It's not out of my imagination to imagine it was bordering on stalker type behavior. On the other hand, like, I do think if it was just as the anti-trans stuff he's been in a while, that's an interesting thing. But I thought Ro Khanna's jumping into it and mentioning Oscar Wilde was a bit strange.
I don't know any of what you're talking about. Yeah. I don't know that guy. And so wait,
Graham Linehan is this guy who he
wrote, Ro Khanna, like, was out.
Ro Khanna is saying he shouldn't have got arrested for when he returned by authorities at the airport. And like, again, I'm not sure what
he's British.
He's a British guy. He wrote like Father Ted and a bunch of like
Irish. But yeah.
Why is Ro Khanna getting involved in this?
I don't know. That's a good question. It's a free speech issue, I guess. Oh, and maybe it
the
is.
The IT
but,
crowd, too.
Oh, did he really? Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's but he's like basically ruined his life by becoming an insane anti-trans person.
Yeah, he was on Rogan recently.
Oh, God. Felonious Monk, how about military reserve in Illinois? The National Guard is attached to the governor, but CNC has control of reserves. But I don't think you can, you know, posse comitatus. Al Knipchen, I heard Greg Stoker should be on your show tomorrow live from the U.S. Veterans Boat as part of the Gaza Flotilla. Great political media strategy they put together as part of the flotilla. Thanks for everything you do. Is that the case?
Yeah.
I don't think it'll be live. I think it might be slightly pre-recorded in the morning just to make sure the tech.
Oh, right.
Talking to a flotilla is okay.
Hopeful One. Don't lives mean anything anymore? I was a rare COVID vaccine J&J side effect that required hospitalization and months of treatment for clots. I still urge any and all to be vaccinated. I know I'm a rare case. Hogtown. COVID broke a lot of brains. Here in Canada, there's a whole class of grifter that wants us to believe they're the brave freedom fighters because when the country asked them to do the bare minimum to keep themselves and their community safe, they were too scared to get a needle. Thank God none of these guys were at Juno Beach or they'd have stayed on the boats.
This anti-vax stuff goes back, I mean, centuries. Ben Franklin, one of the first things he ever printed when he had a printing press as a teenager was anti-vax stuff. We shouldn't be vaccinating ourselves against smallpox. And then he lost a child and then later had to be like, yeah, I was wrong.
And then he also had really bad syphilis, too.
Oh, I don't know about that part, but that's
Ben Franklin.
Very plausible, yeah.
Yeah.
My brain hurts. National Guard are part-time soldiers as of now. When Trump calls, they're not reporting to their real jobs. Can Trump privatize National Guard and pay them good money to be his private army? I mean,
is that kind of what ICE is turning into?
On some level, right? They have just such a huge slush fund; they can just keep pouring money into it. Oh, all right, let's do this.
Welcome back. You guys were on vacation at the same time.
Were you guys hanging out?
I want the phones up. I was trying to avoid this.
It'll be tomorrow for phones.
Imagine, tomorrow?
Yeah.
Oh, shoot.
Imagine if you showed up to the same resort like Dave Rubin was at.
Now, did Dave Rubin have an AI version of himself do his show?
No, what he does now is put in the can a bunch of him being like, hey, here's the left being crazy, and then they'll just cut to a clip. Or here's Bill Maher telling the truth.
That was my favorite one. He had, one of his setups he had is Bill Maher still telling the truth or something.
Like, so we could so for our vacation,
yeah.
I could do like, here's Dave Rubin being an idiot again.
Exactly. Yes. Here's Tim Pool not knowing
you're
anything.
You're not going to believe the absolute BS Tim Pool is spewing.
And that's like a 5-minute clip, 4 minutes of it being Tim Pool.
And then it just cuts to like a random AI generated clip or just, no, he's
no,
got,
no, he's actually, got other people.
He's got somebody
working.
Clipping it, yeah.
So
yeah.
What's the AI part, I thought?
There's no AI part.
I don't know.
There was a story about that I
Let
saw.
Let me look this up.
Not that I saw.
Where was that story? I thought there was a story about him.
The AI would be smarter than Dave Rubin, though, so he can't do that.
Yeah, he would come back, and people would be like, what happened?
You have a grasp of the facts. It seems like you've read the whole article.
Exactly.
You're right, though. Time has... I have to look into this. An AI clone of Dave Rubin is taking over his YouTube show. He is a role model.
Yeah. I'm not going to knock him for that.
We are just days away from that.
I don't want to set up the hypocrisy, you know?
Exactly. No, that's smart. We're not going to judge. But to welcome him back onto his program, what's her name? Jillian
Michaels.
Oh.
You know her?
Yeah, no, I know her. I was on Pierce Morgan with her. And she was the one who said, like, this USAID thing is a just a straw man or some type of canard. There was an article today that in Africa, you're already seeing children dying of lack of vaccination programs and AIDS because of the rollback on this money. Lancet Medical Journal anticipated 14 million people to die over the course of the next 5 or 6 years because of the lack of U.S. funding. Now, on the upside, we've seen the explosion of freedom that has taken place without this money being injected into Africa. Right? Wasn't that her argument? Was that like... it's used to debilitate their development of sustainable food situation. Now, I have no doubt that elements of all of our aid program are either like knock-on sort of CIA projects or direct CIA projects.
Yeah, toward colonial underdevelopment. I don't think that's really, like, Jillian Michaels is not reading Walter Rodney.
I mean, there may be, you know, I'm willing to be charitable about that, but the fact of the matter is, you're still saving lives. And if you want to reform the system and just keep the saving lives part, I'm totally down for that.
Yeah, you have to figure out how to do...
But the idea that that's what Donald Trump is interested in, I'm sorry. Tell me again how he's not a foreign interventionist when he's literally bombing boats in the Caribbean between Venezuela and Trinidad. But here is Jillian Michaels with Dave Rubin.
I think he's bringing her on as like... a co-host or
so something? He does this every year when he comes back. I think he had Ben Shapiro and Jordan Peterson do it previously, like, catch me up with all the news that I didn't read, because the one time of the year he doesn't pay attention to the news is when he's on vacation, apparently.
So Nancy Mace launched a bid for governor of South Carolina, and Marsha Blackburn announced she's going to run for governor in Tennessee. And yeah, there's no video on this. It's just like, what I don't love is, you know, Marsha Blackburn's not for gay marriage. And
is she not? I've interviewed her a couple of times.
I don't think so.
I would bring it up with her next time.
I think she's
oh, you know,
not.
Pause it. You know who's still on vacation is his sound guy.
Especially when it's the topic of gay marriage.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'll bring it up with her next time I see her.
Possibly not.
It up with her next time.
I think she's and pretty aggressively not.
Look,
In 2022, Mace was among 47 Republican representatives who voted in favor of the Respect for Marriage Act, which protects. So unless he's been on vacation since 2022,
this is about Marsha Blackburn, though.
Oh, this is about Blackburn.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
From Tennessee, which I'm sure is the same thing.
Yeah, I'll look up her.
And pretty aggressively not.
Look, anyone can have whatever their own religious and personal philosophical belief is. I don't think that should supersede citizen's right to engage in a relationship that they wish to engage in. And I think the ship has really sailed on that. So I wouldn't.
I hope so.
I wouldn't really. Well, certainly at a governor level, the governor has no ability to do anything about that. But
Here's the concern. I mean, and I'll try to be quick. Is like, I think you saw there was some worry they were going to try to bring up gay marriage in the Supreme Court. It turned out to be a nothing burger. It had to do it. Like, long story short, the Supreme Court didn't agree to hear this case yet. It had to do with this
Pause
woman's
it. So, okay.
Freedom.
All right. Let's define what a nothing burger is. If you have a fear that the Supreme Court is going to revisit marriage equality in the Obergefell case, it's a pretty legitimate concern. Based upon, they certainly set the precedent. They've set the precedent to go back to miscegenation cases about marriage. But it's a nothing burger. Keep telling yourself that. I don't know if you paid attention to what's going on in the Republican Party, but it's a nothing burger. I mean, the reason why Dave Rubin has her on today is because he's no longer on the Blaze, because they found out that not only that he was married, but he was having a kid.
Yeah. Marsha Blackburn. A set of Supreme Court ruling granted marriage equality in 2015 to same-sex couples in all 50 states. Today's Supreme Court decision is a disappointment. I have always supported traditional marriage. She also voted against LGBT-inclusive Employment Non-Discrimination Act, twice voted in favor of the federal constitutional amendment banning marriage equality. So, yeah, ask her about it next time, Dave.
Said he's already interviewed her a few times.
Never came up.
I missed that.
Or it turned out to be a nothing burger. It had to do, it, like, long story short, the Supreme Court didn't agree to hear this case yet.
There's a Seinfeld something over Dave Rubin's. You see that?
Yeah, it's a framed script.
Oh, beautiful.
It had to do with this woman's freedom of speech, I think, and religion, not necessarily relitigating gay marriage, but the concern is that it could come up. And then, like, what if it gets...
Pause for a second.
States?
Look at the look on Dave Rubin's face. This is the... this like, keep it up there. I just look at it. It's like Dave Rubin's face. He apparently... like, I wasn't sure how this worked, but it's quite clear to me now that she came up with these stories. And he is in a full-on panic. Because he must never, ever talk about this topic. Because it was so debilitating to his audience when he was like announced with joy, as one would. You announce with joy when you get the kids. After a couple of years, you start to realize. But he announced with joy about he's having twins, he and his husband, through a surrogate. And his audience just completely... attacked him, and like Glenn Beck had to attack and create distance between them. And,
they're calling him unholy.
And unholy. And look at the look of terror on his face as she is talking about this.
It's like he's in a roller coaster.
It's honestly like, my God, didn't anybody tell you we never, ever talk about this?
Are you choking?
To hear this case yet, that had to do with this woman's freedom of speech, I think, and religion, not necessarily relitigating gay marriage, but the concern is that it could come up, and then, like, what if it gets kicked back to the states, and if it does, you know, what kind of influence?
At the end of the day, we have equal protection under the law that's guaranteed in the Constitution of the United States. Marriage, in and of itself, is not in the Constitution, so if you're going to say that straight people can get married, then gay people can get married, but let's...
All right.
Let's not talk about this anymore.
Here we go. August 11th, it was revealed that a former Democrat Intelligence Committee staffer turned whistleblower told the FBI in 2017 that Adam Schiff personally approved leaking classified information on Russia to smear President Trump. We probably should have had this earlier, but there you go.
Look what magically got fixed after this topic.
The sound came back on?
Yeah. The producers working furiously in the background, but kind of a nice save to not have to say that with your full voice about the, well, you know.
Constitution.
What did Thomas Jefferson think about gay people?
We could keep going. We can keep going. Exactly. Dave from Jamaica is like he's calculating the drop in subscribers.
Yes.
You could see the numbers dropping.
I'm going to look into this AI thing, though.
What else do we have in terms of sound? I'll read some more IMs here. Oh, what is this? Oh, yeah, let's just do this. This is really strange. You know that there's all sorts of... construction going on at the White House.
Beautiful ballroom.
It's still a little bit weird that this is the way that they would do, like getting rid of like construction materials from the White House. Like you generally have like shoots, you know, from like second floor windows, or I would imagine like maybe they would use carts and go out some type of service. It's hard to imagine that you have professional contractors going like, oh, just chuck it out the window. It's the White House. Chuck it out the window. So here is
like, I would feel ashamed of doing that in my apartment.
Having some awareness of the way the construction people operate and assuming that the White House did probably feel people are like, well, we should be on our best behavior. There could be some scrutiny here. This is what's going on at the White House.
Here's the footage.
This is the second floor window. It does not look like construction. It's like someone just threw out a cat or something like there.
Somebody there, right? Right now, right? Oh, there you go. You got it? You zoomed in?
I mean, was that two bags or just one bag?
If this happened when Biden was in the White House,
that's crazy. I know he's gonna get a whole TV show.
They would have such a developed theory about what this means.
Oh yeah, no, it's Hunter Biden throwing out a whole bag of math or something.
That's a bag of laptops.
Then they're throwing out something else.
This is Melania throwing out like her boyfriend's clothes before Trump.
Was there
comes
something
out.
Else that comes out? I don't know what that is. It's strange. But I mean, who knows? I mean, I can't even.
What
imagine.
Is it like around that?
Who knows what's going on there? But somebody asked Trump, and I think you know,
Peter Ducey.
And Peter Ducey asked this question, and I think the idea is that like Trump's at this point, we know the White House. All they've been doing is lobbying Congress not to release the Epstein files. And so you've always got to have a backup plan. What if they do? Well, of course, you're going to say that it's fake. And what is Grandpa's way of sending something's fake? There we go.
There's a video that is circulating online now of the White House where a window is open to the residents upstairs and somebody is throwing a big bag out the window. Have you seen this?
No, that's probably AI generated.
So
actually, you can't open the windows. You know why? They're all heavily armored and bulletproof.
So that's a fake video?
Well, it's got to be because I know every window up there. The last place I'd be doing it is that because there's cameras all over the place, right? Including yours. No, but every window.
Pause it for a second. The argument is the video of somebody throwing something out the window would never happen because there's cameras everywhere and somebody would see it.
That's
and,
the last place I would do that. Whatever was being not done by the AI.
Where's the first place you would do it, Mr.
But do what, Mr. President?
I mean, here's
you
the...
You clearly know what was happening.
Here's the strangest thing about it. Like, why wouldn't you just, as the President of the United States, say, like, I honestly have no idea what you're talking
about.
Yeah,
they're probably doing construction. I don't know.
Maybe somebody changed his diaper?
This was like the question that they asked him yesterday of, like, have you heard the rumors of you dying? No, I haven't heard it at all. Of course,
I heard him to an extent.
To some extent, I heard it. Like, I heard that, like, they said I was dead, and that I was reading that they said I was dead, and I wasn't coming out, and I had bruises on my hand, which, of course, is not true. But I didn't hear anything about that whatsoever. I would have never heard about that.
It's probably AI, because I would never do what those people were doing.
He's just, like, so. He is so programmed to lie about anything. I worked on a show called I'm with Ducey. And let me tell a fictional fan fiction story right now that is obviously not true at all, but it's a fictional story. Wouldn't this be funny?
It's like a composite.
Yeah, wouldn't this be funny type of thing? And I'm going to change the names. So it was I'm with Bussy. And... And At one point, the office that we were working in caught fire. Like, it had a fire overnight, and we had to shut down production. And a producer called the host of the show, this is all fictional, and said, "Hey, Jerry, we have to stop production for a while." And Jerry answered, "Why?" And they said, "Well, there was a fire in our office. I didn't do it." No one. No one thought that you did it. What? Why? Why? I mean, just an inveterate sort of
it's guilty conscience. Too.
Yeah. God.
Out the window. Have you seen this?
No, that's probably AI generated.
So,
actually, you can't open the windows. You know why? They're all heavily armored and bulletproof.
So that's a fake video.
Well, it's got to be because I know every window up there. The last place I'd be doing it is that because there's cameras all over the place, right, including yours. No, but every window, I've never seen a window that's – in fact, my wife was complaining about it the other day. She said, love to have a little fresh air come in, but you can't. They're bulletproof.
And, pause it. What do you think the actual the that's just a paraphrase. The actual thing is like, you smell like shit. You smell. I don't want to be here. You smell. Like, I can smell your flaw, your rotting flesh.
She's like, I need to go get some air.
I need to get some air. Don't want to be in here. You're making me sick.
I'm going to Florida.
I feel sick to my stomach.
I would jump out of this window.
I'll be in Italy.
Heavily armored.
Where they have air.
Number one, they're sealed. And number two, each window weighs about 600 pounds. You have to be pretty strong to open them up. No, that has to be. Where was the window? Let me see.
Is this really happening?
For people watching, Ducey has now come up to the podium and is showing him his phone screen.
You know, it would be fascinating if Ducey worked for a news organization that could actually attempt to assess the validity of this instead of asking the president, hey, was somebody throwing garbage out the window?
No, those are 600-pound windows. That was AI.
Well, I can understand, like... Like, where did the whole 600-pound window thing? Either they're bolted down.
He knows real estate.
Or they weigh 600 pounds. Or maybe he once tried to open the window. He couldn't do it. And
it's
people
a
like,
regular
oh, Mr.
window.
President, they're 600 pounds. And also, they're completely locked. That's why you can't open it, sir. Oh, okay. I said it makes sense. I thought I was. Thank God, I can't winded by just picking up a golf club.
That's how he bruised his hand. He's trying to open that window open.
I can't do it.
The half ton window slammed on my hand.
Which is the window?
It looks like this is on the 15th Street side, I think. Yeah. So right here.
Yeah, those windows are sealed. Those windows are all sealed. You can't open them. It's the kind of thing they do. And one of the problems we have with AI, it's both good and bad. If something happens really bad, just blame AI.
Oh.
Also, they create things, you know. It works both ways.
Yes.
If something happens that's really bad, maybe I'll have to just blame AI. But there's truth to it because
oh
I see so
God.
Many phony things. I saw something as I was growing up from the time I was a baby till now. I said, who did that? It was AI generated. So it's a little bit scary, to be honest with you.
I mean, think of all the things you could do with, let's say, files. Like you could create fake files or videos of people like with all sorts of nefarious people
in a Moscow
and
hotel.
Being in like a or being in Florida or at someone's island or an airplane, or maybe people with AI could claim things about you being with
using undocumented labor
or young women. Like AI could be just all I'm saying is if you see any files that are wrong, it's probably AI.
If you see any videos of anybody chumming around with Jeffrey Epstein at a party in the 90s.
Definitely AI.
I've said this about AI for a while. Like, for the major concern, like, expressed is that it's going to be used to fake videos about politicians. And you can do that. People have done it. Like, here, make Chuck Schumer in a hotel room with
used,
a brothel.
Its presence is going to be used to discredit real things.
Real things, exactly, by the powerful, saying that evidence you think you have, actually, that's made up.
Go ahead. Is there anything left?
That's it. That's amazing. It? Just. I didn't see that full clip where he just says, like, maybe if something bad happens, I'll just blame AI. Like, you're not supposed to say that.
Oh.
Maybe if someone's caught throwing out files out of the second story window, I'll just say it's AI.
But that video of me saying blame AI was also AI. So
I never said that. AI said that.
This whole thing with Deucey is AI right now.
Kowalski from Nebraska. This is a long IM, so skip it, but don't skim it. Most COVID discourse is missing the point, in my opinion, because the global response to COVID was the greatest collective achievement of humanity in the last 30 years, and nothing else comes close. For nearly 6 solid weeks, the great powers of the world quarantined themselves, which brought manufacturers time to build enough PPE to allow a minor sense of normality to return to come summer. Most hospitals were not overwhelmed, at least for not very long. That is a very good point. The issue was bend the curve. Remember this? Like, we don't want hospitals to be overwhelmed. And that worked for nearly 6 solid weeks. Oh, my gosh. The IMs are coming in so fast that it's almost, I can't, hold on. Read.
Don't skim it.
I can't read it. I got to find it on my other thing. Bear with me, folks. It's one of those technical challenge days. This is still my first week back. And so I'm, oh my God, we have so many IMs. I can't even find.
We didn't even tell you Restream didn't work the first Friday you were gone.
Oh, it didn't?
No, we had to scramble.
We got to also check that because I think we're at our limit.
Nope, that's all taken care of.
Okay. For nearly 6 solid weeks, great powers would quarantine themselves, which bought manufacturers time to build enough PPE to allow a minor sense of normality return come summer. Most hospitals were not overwhelmed, at least for not very long. The globe shared its research in pandemic that should have killed tens of millions and been a scourge for 5 to 10 years, was reduced to a manageable yet still serious epidemic within 2. Obviously, we should learn from the mistakes that were made. However, it's undeniable that tens of millions of lives were saved and hundreds of millions were spared the trauma of losing loved ones. The primary issue, as I see it, is one of narrative. At no point did liberals in any country create a narrative around COVID that either was aspirational to the achievement of defeating the virus or remembrance of those with whom we lost a holiday of sorts similar to that of Memorial Day, which would have recognized probably 10 years to reflect on the trauma collectively as a society to process what had happened. This lack of narrative continues to be the primary issue with liberals today, hoping that the corporate mainstream media will do anything other than inflame tensions. Narratives are important because the liberals did nothing to get control of this narrative. The woo-woo health and anti-science crowd like JFK, RFK Jr. are writing the narrative. This is very similar to how the Lost Cause myth got perpetrated. I think Mamdani is a clear representation of somebody who knows how to create a narrative, and it makes you indestructible because everyone knows who you are, what you believe, why you believe it, and why you should support it. Thank you for reading my TED Talk. I think that's very well said. And I think part of it was that the liberal center has become so neoliberal in its politics. Which, to be clear, is, and I'm talking actual neoliberal, go look it up, as defined by what came out of Mont Pelerin and all of the, what we call, to some extent, libertarians today. That libertarian mind virus, the idea that we have to repel against any type of collective solution, or that the collective needs to take care of everybody, as opposed to it's every man for themselves. There was not enough pushback on that. No, to be fair, too, Trump was in charge. It was very difficult to create a narrative when you did not have control of the government. Because you couldn't, you could talk about it, but when you had Trump sitting there going like, we got to pretend like COVID doesn't exist. And the only meaningful thing he did was literally like a month before the election, when Operation Warp Speed started to get the vaccines more or less online. Nobody wanted to encourage him because they want him to lose the election. And I mean, I think a lot of the people at the CDC just had no idea, like, how do we do our job and not trip over these tripwires? But you're right. There was, and also I think like there is a sociological phenomena that I think took place during the so-called Spanish flu pandemic as well. It's so disturbing to people. The whole experience was so disturbing that I think people just like want to forget about it and minimize it. I mean, I remember, you know, talking to my son and saying, you know, I remember like thinking like my grandmother was my son's age, maybe a little bit older during the pandemic. And she never, ever mentioned a single word, but to my kid, like this was like, but he doesn't, you know, he'll mention it a little bit, but not, I can see why nobody talked about it afterwards. It's just the whole thing was so distasteful. But there should have been, but I don't know who does that in that instance. But you're right. Pittsburgh, Nate. 600-pound lead windows prescribed by RFK to heal the White House from vaccines. Dave from Tallinn. Wouldn't be surprised me if they blew up that boat to distract from Trump's AI answer F up.
I would think the Epstein press conference more if we're going down that
lashing out, yeah,
theory hole.
You guys said people would care. Nobody cared.
That, I mean,
next time, we've got to blow up 5 boats.
And it's going to be in Mexico. We're going to just start bombing Mexico.
How many people do I have to kill?
We've got to bomb a country. Sassy Molasses, how long until Trump deploys a false big balls operation?
Just send that kid around to keep getting beat up.
The dude... Florida just put out they're going to eliminate mandatory vaccines for kids. I mean,
it's insane I hear nurses in New York having to prepare for measles because of like Texas and stuff. And that's like all gone away now. People have forgotten all about it.
Charlie Jerk, did any of you see Anna Kasparian on CNN agree with Scott Jennings that deploying the National Guard is good and successfully reduce crime just with its presence?
I missed seeing her talk with her friend Ben Shapiro.
When did that happen?
They were on together on CNN together.
Shapiro was on?
Yep, Shapiro was on with Anna promoting his new book.
And what was she doing?
I mean, they disagreed a little bit about Social Security versus funding Israel and stuff like that. But I didn't see the part where she sort of continued her trend to Aragua support for, you know, calling them terrorists and having the government
and
involved.
Pretend that like we're overrun with crime.
Yeah, we need the National Guard now.
It's really shocking that bringing in the National Guard would inhibit crime. You know what else would inhibit crime? What if we just made it like a curfew?
Yeah,
just every day, 4 p.m. curfew.
Just support. Just say we should do what Bukele is doing.
You know what else would inhibit crime? Surveillance cameras in everybody's homes.
Ankle monitors, everybody.
Everybody wears ankle monitors. Everybody needs to show their papers when they go into any public building. We can completely eliminate crime. Completely. You know what else actually would eliminate crime? If we were all in jail. If we were all in jail. Juice for Jesus. I've noticed Majority Report seems to have technical issues in the segments where Sam is uninterested in engaging with the topic. Curiously Rubenesque.
Oh, that's not true. We just have tech issues.
I've been uncharacteristically calm during them. Have you noticed that?
I have noticed that.
You don't notice it. You've never seen me.
Well, I just think you were being calm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what you were like previously.
I thought that was just because Brian's new and you don't want to.
No, and, scare him away. I mean,
I don't think he cares.
No, he's got until October 1st.
Isn't that the autism deadline for RFK too?
I'm going to solve it all by mid September.
I forgot about that.
Oh. What about if we just give grants to all the organizations that I lead? Would that suffice? Live Luigi. Trump should ask Barron to teach him about AI. Step one, turn on the computer. Let's see here. Dan for Columbus. Trump contradicts himself immediately all the time. During the 2016 primaries, when asked about the John Barron tapes, he said, I haven't heard the tapes. It doesn't sound like me. Refresher for anybody. Trump used to call people claiming to be his PR person under the alias John Barron and tell him how cool he was. Yes, we have tapes of Trump calling like New Yorker magazine or New York magazine writers. And
did he change his voice?
Not really. Not really. It was fascinating. What? There's no effing way the windows at the White House are sealed shut. What if there were a fire at the White House?
You can't even shoot. It's like a Tesla. You just have to burn alive.
They're throwing chairs at the windows, trying to break the glass, and it just bounces off.
Shooting guns. Bullets are ricocheting everywhere.
All the windows are completely sealed.
600 pounds.
There's no way to get out. That's true. Of course the windows aren't sealed. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard, actually, now. Like, I could see how the windows would be, you know, like a bulletproof glass. Maybe they're a little bit heavier than normal windows. But why would you, like, what is the idea here? That there, I guess, someone would be have a long-range rifle? I mean, they're completely surrounded by snipers and... Catlec, I will pay $2 American to anyone who can prove to me that Don Trump has ever opened a window himself. Dave from Jamaica. Now I'm certain something got tossed.
Yeah, I was suspicious until he immediately said that was probably AI.
Probably AI.
I'm the president. I don't know what you're talking. I have important things.
No, I pay attention to everything that's thrown out the window. That's one of my primary jobs.
I was actually talking with Russia and China. Like, I don't know. Just say something.
It is amazing how, like, he must do so little that he can't even come up with an excuse. All he's doing is sitting.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't want anyone to know that I spend most of my time in the video camera surveillance room just watching all the images.
Refreshing. Thanks.
DJ, the makeup artist, when do we get to see Tim Beeny back in the White House press room lobbing softballs and licking boots?
I don't think that they... Like, Caroline Leavitt, you can look at the last time Tim asked a question, and I feel like Caroline Leavitt wasn't that impressed with his question. I don't think he made a good impression.
Northwest Charter. Have you all mentioned the New York Times article about the Maine brewer who's running the in the Democratic Senate primary? Dude, he was on the show last week. And a Majority Report listener. Yeah, we talk about him literally every day.
By the way, New York Times breaking news saying that the Trump administration or advisors in the Trump administration are offering jobs to Eric Adams and Curtis Sliwa to make room for Cuomo.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think that works.
Yeah.
Nope. I mean, I guess it would be closer.
Can Sliwa accept that, though?
Huh?
Sliwa can't accept that.
He won't.
Yeah.
Why?
Because he's, like, idiosyncratic, like, not yeah. a sort of freak. Maybe I'm wrong about this, but I feel like he likes just, you know, barely getting any votes as a Republican in whenever he runs for office here. I don't think he wants that.
Although I saw an interview where he took the beret off, and I was like, oh, he means business
now.
Oh,
crap. That's not good.
Yeah, he took the beret off.
He's an odd guy. He is definitely an odd guy. Eric Adams, I would imagine, is already in a car driving to Washington, D.C.
He's like picking out jobs he would take.
Like he's literally writing down, if he doesn't already have like a this is what it would take list. That guy is so transactional. He knows he's done.
He's hitting home runs left and right in his mind. Yeah.
Tom Barrack is the current ambassador to Turkey. So,
oh, he's going to go to like, he's going to get, just look at the openings. He's going to get some sweet ambassadorship and also like a sinecure in Trump Industries or something. I really like crypto. How do I get involved in something like that? Well, Majority Report wardrobe coordinator, after you get the Silicon Sam Cedar, you can go to Cumbie's whenever you want. All right. Three more of these. JR in Philly. Sam, how excited are you for Chelsea Clinton running for Nadler's seat? I've seen a chance that Lena Khan may run for that seat. And Chelsea
She's
Clinton.
Poo-pooed that.
Huh?
I think Khan has poo-pooed that a little
Oh,
bit.
Really?
Yeah.
Personally, I'm very excited about Chelsea Clinton winning
Oh,
this
my
election.
God.
I know. I've missed her since she stopped doing her work at MSNBC for
15 minutes.
That no-show job.
One day.
The Kawhi Leonard deal.
Nassau County spokesperson. You see what Swazi said? Told DSA and Mamdani to start their own party because they're not Democrats in his eyes. What an effing joke that dude is. Literally a Republican that run as a Democrat because it's politically advantageous in New York's third. I mean, good luck with him. He can go F himself. And the final I am of the day. I got to scroll. Oh, my God. We got a lot of IMs. Snarkorski, yay Kowalski. That guy is awesome. I still feel like time passed weirdly during COVID. Occasionally something will remind me of something that happened during COVID, and I feel a tiny taste of what PTSD must be like. Working at home in the basement, never going out, meeting in groups, some little thing our dog did, it takes me back to that place, and I get a little flare of anxiety. Yeah, I feel that. Matt, Brian, great job today. I mean, good job today. we'll be here tomorrow. Bye-bye.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught. See the truth in the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot. choice is made for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the man's